Menace Nation, it's Menace Morning Time.
Wake 'em up.
I don't do the most, but I do a lot.
Tryna hide from the camera.
I'ma make a toast, cause we still alive.
I ain't going outside today.
No big.
Couldn't find our tick. So I'm drinking on Accutane.
I feel like Pac.
I'ma pull up my style. We gon' do a drive-by in the rain.
I shoot a shot. I'm coming in.
I'ma take it to trial. Pray the Lord I beat the case. That man be calling.
It is Wednesday, April 27th. Welcome to Midday Menace. Official name change. Just don't have a graphic yet. I am Zach Smith, your host, with my co-host, Chris Drew. What a day. A celebratory day. If you are a college football fan, because Mark Emmert, I don't know, he's resigning someday. That's what he announced. It'd be like me saying, I'm going to stop doing this podcast someday. It's like, yeah, no shit. Is it in 50 years or next week? Like when? It's like, I don't know, sometime before, you know, around 2023, maybe. But honestly, I think it was the right move just so they can figure out what their plan is and get that plan in place before he walks away and sticks them with some interim. Although I would argue that you could put a fucking chimpanzee in that role and they would do a better job than Mark Emmert has done. So I don't know that he's saving them anything. And I was just kind of going through what his tenure as the NCAA president has been. So we'll get to that. We're going to talk about the defensive side of the draft, a lot of conversation about, you know, some of these different draft prospects, where they might land, and really some philosophical conversation about DBs, safeties, how high do you take them? So we're excited to get to that. But I do want to mention something. I've mentioned it several times on the show, zone6.com. It's an athlete development platform. And I've been building this. So what it is, it's a ball reception analyzer, right? It's a way for you to chart just reps you do with your with a quarterback or with a coach or with your dad or whatever. Run routes, catch balls, and if you just chart it, it'll spit out your weaknesses. I wanted to show you this, Chris, and I'll show you right. So this is it, right? This is all. It's an Excel document. It'll be on the Zone 6 subscription. This is all you have to type in: what route you ran, what direction you were looking. The angle of your break, which I'll break down in the video when I drop this analyzer, what that means. And then did you catch it or not, right? And then a notes thing for if you want to take notes. And this is gonna develop over the next year, and it's going to become a fucking nasty tool. And this is what it gives out to you. You can break down every type of route when you had the ideal dominant hand in the right spot, the ideal dominant eye in the right spot. I'll tell you how to figure out each. And you can find, and this is a way for you to identify weaknesses, right? Like on 90 degree breaks, digs and outcuts. You know, when my dominant hand is on top, I drop the ball more than when it's on the bottom, right? You identify that, and then we will give you the drill work to work on that. So I wanted to show you this because I don't want it to just be, hey, me saying, hey, go sign up for Zone 6. This is going to be different than anything you've seen when it comes to athlete development. So I wanted to show you just, and that is I'm talking about the infant version of where that one tool is going to go. And we're going to keep developing tools and giving them to you, or if you're a coach or if you're an athlete, I mean, whatever it is, just trying to show you we're doing things different. This is not some guy saying, you know, doing a four cone drill saying, touch that cone, catch the ball. Like this is different. And so you get a 7-day free trial if you sign up at any time. I'm keeping that on there until it, you know, I don't know, until I want to get rid of it. Maybe I never will. 7-day free trial. Go to zone6.com, click the development tab, and sign up. It's free, and then you can cancel. I know we have a bunch of people that have signed up. So I wanted to show you a little something on the other side of football that maybe you don't get it, you know,
yeah,
understand. And Nick just asked in the chat, was that something that you used when you coached? No. This is stuff that I started studying after I left coaching. I mean, LSU, I got a meeting with a guy named Jack Marucci. I've told the story before. He runs sports performance at LSU. And it was he and I and Greg Fry, a former Ohio State quarterback. And we were talking about athlete development and specifically talking about eyes, right? And he blew me away when he started talking about ocular dominance is what they call it. Basically, you have one eye that is dominant. I'll do it for you right now. Watch this. So all you have to do, if you hold your arms out in a diamond, right, and put something in the middle of that diamond, whichever eye shows up in the diamond is your dominant eye, right? Watch this. So if you see right there, I'm right eye dominant, right?
Oh, let me start my nose.
So that means you're right eye dominant, and then you can go through percentages, and there's far scientific ways to identify it. But anyways, we started talking about eye dominance, manual dominance, like when you have a dominant hand and how that leads to drops, how to train it, how to make you better. It blew me away. This is in 2018. Absolutely blew me away. And it let me know that Ohio State was behind the times when it comes to athlete development, because I'd never even, I mean, I knew, we talked about with my receivers, like which hand they were comfortable with on top. We did drills to develop both hands individually. We did some eye training where you'd patch an eye and work another eye, but it wasn't scientific. It was just, we knew, and I knew that it was something, right? That one eye was stronger than the other. You got to work one, but there was no science behind it. So now we've applied the science to it. So that was long-winded. That was longer than I wanted to go, but I got a question. I got excited. So anyways, go to Zone 6. That'll be on there today. And it's going to be, like I said, it's an infant version of basically a ball reception tracker. Figure out your weaknesses if you don't already know them, and it'll give you a number to it, right? Like what percent chance do you have of catching the ball when your non-dominant hand is the one stopping it on a go route? I think it's something that every player should know, because you need to work it, right, to improve that percentage. So wanted to show that to you. Go to zone6.com. Anyways, moving on. Mark Emmert, Chris, and I'll let you kick it off because I have a lot to say about Mark Emmert and his 12-year tenure as the president of the NC2A.
Yeah, man, he's been in charge for a long time, and obviously Ohio State fans that are deep in the trenches kind of are familiar with who he is. As long as I've been paying very close attention to the sport, I'm only 25 years old. I mean, Mark Emmert has been kind of the head of it, and now – would be a perfect time for them to move to a full commissioner of NCAA. But I know they won't do it, because things that make sense to the NCAA, just things that make sense and should happen, never tend to happen. And honestly, he did a lot of harm to the sport, and it became very clear that, he was never really an athlete. Now, I haven't looked that up, but just kind of some of the moves that were made, definitely a lot of thumbs down comes from him. But I know that there's, part of it is like the president of the NCAA comes up through the academic world. So there's some detachment there. And I think there were moments where he started to kind of grow closer to the sports side and then was pulled back for some reason, or just opted to just be ignorant or act like the smartest in the room, causing some issues. I'm excited. I think it's a good thing that he's stepping down at some point. But I also understand that sometimes things can get worse. So I am kind of worried, because I feel like it's like with Kevin Warren as the Big Ten commissioner. It's like high hopes maybe at some point, and then it's like, oh, like things can get worse. But I know you've been very vocal on Twitter about him in the past.
He's the worst president in the history of the NCAA, and what he did to the game of football and just how everything operates within the game of football is I don't want to say he destroyed football, because that's very like Chicken Little, like the sky is falling, but he did everything in his power to try to destroy college athletics. And here's the reason why.
He scratched the CD is what I would say. Scratched the CD.
I would even say he broke it, and we're sitting here trying to figure out how to glue it together and not make it skip. Like, if he did far worse than scratch it. But what would you expect from a fucking political studies professor? That's what he is. And this is where it blows my mind. We talked about it with the college football playoff. We talk about it all the fucking time. Why is a political studies professor, who I get it, became like university president, with his resume, his expertise, why is he running the Athletic Association of National Colleges? Why would that ever be the case? Why not an athletic director, even with a business background, that has ran athletic departments? This man ran universities and started teaching you about government. If that's not fucked up enough, like, he's teaching you about our government. Our government is corrupt and fucked up as shit. who would have thought this guy would fuck up the NCAA as bad as he did? But it goes back to my point, and this is what I don't know, and I still am going to look into it and study it, and we'll probably do an episode about it. Who is on the board? Who is deciding who runs college football? Because that's the problem, right? It's not that Kevin Warren's the Big Ten. It's who decided that Kevin Warren would be the leader of the Big Ten. And that person was Michael Drake. He used race cards and got him pushed in front of the guy from Northwestern. That's what happened. We found that out, right? Who decided that this dude, Mark Emmert, should run the NCAA? You look at all the things he fucked up. NIL, complete disaster. I mean, horrible, horrible. I wouldn't even say horrible plan. There was no plan. Just made it legal, right? Transfer portal, just wild, wild west. No stipulations, nothing, right? Go back to 2013. The changes that he allowed in football with targeting and ejections was moronic. He ruined the game of football. No common sense human being could ever convince anyone with a brain that if I'm going to hit someone in his rib cage area and that person lowers his profile and we collide helmets, that I should be ejected. Anyone that says that is an absolute buffoon and should immediately be kicked out of the sport and having any decisions, right? Not only that, not only is it that dumb, right? In 2013, when he rolled it out, this is how poor of a job he did. They rolled out the rule and didn't think about, oh, wait a minute. What if when they review it, they see it's not targeting?
Yeah. They had to leave it as a 15-yard penalty.
They even still if it's got not penalized for something that they just admitted didn't happen.
Yeah.
The worst president, the worst leader in the history of college athletics, Mark Emmert. So round of applause, Mark. You almost fucked it up for real, for good. You almost you almost ruined it. Now, I will say you tainted it beyond belief. But I don't know if you intentionally tried to ruin it, but you tried hard. Mm-hmm. And so I could go on forever. The two-point conversion overtimes is it's bizarre. I'm not even against it yet because it was kind of funny to watch. But it's you're not playing football at that point, so you're deciding the sport, doing something different. They ended kickoff returns forever. I mean, kickoff return will never be a thing, although I definitely think the wedge was insanity, allowing four people to hold hands and just bulldoze people. That was nuts. But having single blocks all over the field, I mean, it's not that dangerous. So they're making it out to be more than it is. I will say a couple things that did happen under his tenure that were positive. They legalized texting in recruiting because that was just absurd. I mean, I would sit there and direct message a kid on my phone to his phone. I'm like, why can't I just text him? It's just a different app. Like, yeah. It doesn't make sense. And they finally legalized that. He allowed dunking in pregame in basketball. Another of the dumbest rules ever. Like, why can't I just dunk it? Kids would go up and just like drop it in. It's like, I mean, just dunk it. Yeah.
It's supposed to be fun. Do fun stuff as a part of the sport.
Like, I mean, maybe you could make it like nothing flamboyant, like off the backboard windmills, but like,
even that, but just don't hang on the rim. Like, I'm cool. Like, if you have a thing about dunking, just tell them not to hang on the rim.
But that's like saying in football, like, hey, listen, guys, you can throw it around it and run it before the game to get warmed up, but no deep balls. All right. It's like, what? Why? Is there a reason? We can dunk all we want in the game. But in pregame, that's a no-no. So that was a stupid rule. So
yeah, it's like, what if kickers could only warm up by kicking into the net pregame? Like, they didn't get to get out there.
No field goals. It's not the game yet. Not the game yet. You kick in the net or kick in the crowd.
Right.
It was a dumb rule. So he fixed that, I guess. So give him credit where credit's due. He did, what did I say? Two things in 12 years. Really fucking knocked it out the park.
It's crazy, and it's a philosophy issue because he went to school for some political bullshit, right? And basically that political stuff, but I've talked to plenty of political science majors, people who have, you know, worked their way through academia and in the academics world. And a lot of it is to do with, can you bullshit the best and can you talk over people's heads? And when you do those, when you get good at those two things, because that's the NCAA position is the only position that you like, you don't need any experience in that world to be in charge of sports. And it's absurd because everywhere else, for you to be a head coach, Zach, you got to go be a coach. Like, what if they hired you? Like, what if Urban Meyer was never a head coach? He went to college, went to school, you know, to be a coach. Then they're like, oh, we're going to make you the head coach. You have a political degree. You're smart and you could do this. Make him in charge. It's like, no, that would never happen.
It's literally like it's just treating a leader as a leader and assuming he can build a great corporation. But without the insight of the content, like what the company specialty is, like, I don't know how you do that.
Yeah.
And it's just
fucking make Elon Musk the president of NCAA.
Yeah, you will have. I mean, I guess I don't know if any people that are opposed. I don't even want to talk about the Elon Musk thing because it is the biggest joke ever. It really is. Like,
I love man. Get your ass off Twitter. The door.
Right. I'm done with Twitter. Sean King was off Twitter for an hour. He said, I'm done. I'm out. Deleted Twitter. A bunch of people commented on how he deleted Twitter and they were celebrating it, you know, on one side. And some bitch came back from the dead, reactivated his Twitter and started calling them liars and saying that he didn't get off Twitter. It's like when I first saw it, I went to his thing and it said deleted. Like I saw it. I know he got off Twitter.
What it's like? It's like the people that post on Instagram stories and Snapchat stories. Like, man, I'm sick of this shit. Like, y'all bug me for real. Don't hit me up. Like, I'm getting off. If you need something, text me. 2 days later, you see him posting and everything's cool.
It's like an alcoholic.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
It's like, man, I'm not drinking again. I'm done. Like, I am done. And then later that evening, you're like, man, it's been stressful. Here we go. Like, damn, that didn't last long.
Run that thing back, man. It's crazy. I've witnessed that before. Like, someone who was like not supposed to drink. And then they told me at the beginning of that they can't drink. I saw them at the end of the night. They had a Bud Light in their hand. put it on the ground immediately. I was like, I'm not going to snitch. I'm staying out of folks' business. But the important thing here is hopefully that was rock bottom and we can take a step up. Like, well, that's, I mean, all we want.
That's the deal. And so we're going to do research into the board and who it is and who's making these decisions, because it honestly shapes college football. I mean, you can go, I could go on forever. I don't want to make the whole show about it, 'cause we got a draft to talk about, but the reality is, I mean, the rules they made in recruiting were always just so out of touch. I mean, allowing satellite camps. Nobody wanted to do satellite camps. Jim Harbaugh's goofy ass started doing them, and the whole country was like, the fuck? Like, what is this? Fly to South Florida to see one recruit, and we have to do a whole camp just to hang out with them? Like, especially in the summer, the only time you really get to see your family as a coach. And then, I mean, and it's also a time where you can intimately get with your players and work with them one-on-one. It's like, now we're flying around the country doing satellite camps, and they approved it and allowed it. And it's like, I don't know. They made so many out of touch, just ignorant. They was just ignorance. They didn't know how bad of decisions they were making, because he's a poli-sci guy. That's what he is. Poli-sci guy. That should be his Twitter name, at poli-sci guy, because he's not an athletic guy. Why is he running an athletic organization? So you hope, we can put it to bed with that, but you hope that this board or whoever the fuck these people are that control all of college athletics, you hope they make the decision to hire someone with at least some athletic background.
Yeah.
I mean, even if it's an accounting guy or business guy that has been running an athletic department, at least he has a clue.
It has to be someone who likes sports and someone who understands the value in sports. So many people from that world, neither of those two things apply. And it's like at the top of every company, that's what you want. Someone who is passionate about it and understands the importance of it. If those two things aren't met, something always goes wrong and it gets left in a worse place than it was, because more times than not, the person before them, one of those two things applied, or the really, really great ones, both of those things applied. Zach, I do want to move on to the draft talk.
Yes, let's talk. Let's talk about it. Let's get to the show.
Let's talk about a draft. All right, I want to start with something that I think is absurd. So this Aiden Hutchinson train is off the tracks. We're going full speed ahead, almost. He's going to be a top 5 pick. He's going to be a top 8 pick. I wanted to ask you, start it off. I want you to let him know, all the Michigan fans, whoever, how, like, there's been all this talk about how he could be, you know, more athletic. He's more athletic than the Bosa's based on testing numbers. You know, he's just as dominant, yada this, yada that. Is he closer to the Bosa's, or is he closer to a guy like Sam Hubbard and just been inflated by the fact that he stayed so long and the 1 year?
Yeah, I think the reality is, and Sam Hubbard's an NFL starter. So
yes,
this is
a good one. And I don't want to take shots at him at all.
Sometimes Michigan fans don't like to have perspective or to listen to reality. It's extreme world, right? If he's not as good as the Bosa's, I'm saying he sucks. No, he is probably right dead smack in the middle between Sam Hubbard and where Joey and Nick Bosa are. He's not as good as the Bosa's. That's not Ohio State bias. I've watched Nick and Joey, I don't know, 8,000 reps, and I've studied the shit out of Aiden Hutchinson, not only for the Michigan Ohio State show that we did, but I did a full breakdown of that game and I studied him for this draft. And here's the reality, Chris, and not go over well, but I think he's the fifth best defensive end in the country last year. Fifth. And one of them went back to college football. The best one, Will Anderson. He was the best DN in college football, but Kayvon Thibodeau is a better, more impactful pass rusher and player than Aiden Hutchinson. Right.
Jermaine Johnson
at Florida State is a freak. Mm-hmm. He is a better impact than Aiden Hutchinson. And Trayvon Walker, who I think is going to be the number one overall pick, is a better defensive end than Aiden Hutchinson. He's the fourth best D end in this draft and was the fifth best D end in college football last year. And he's still going to be a really good pro, but he's not this. They're making him out to be JJ Watt. And it's like, whoa. I mean, I'm not saying he can't continue to develop and become, you know, maybe level up a little bit.
I think he could be a good player. The issue with this draft thing, it's almost worse than the recruiting thing. Like, a guy has you know, a good season, and all of a sudden, oh, yeah, his comp is Joey Bosa. Joey Bosa and Nick Bosa are two of the five best defensive ends in football. It's not fair for anyone to compare Aiden to them, especially when he hasn't been productive until this year.
And and people talk about Joey and Nick a lot. Like, Chase Young is a slight cut above those two.
I think so as well. And I mean, it's not even fair to say, but I think so as well.
I mean, so it's, I don't, and I see the comment, like, can you rank Chase, Nick, and Joey? No, I really can't. Joey was the best defensive lineman I've ever seen in my entire life. And then Nick came around and he had an injury, and then, you know, and so we didn't get to see him in his finality in college. So Joey edged Nick in college. Now in the NFL, they're both ridiculous. And Chase was, you know, I wasn't there for his last year, but he was, as a freshman, I mean, it was, I've never seen anything like it. So it's hard to rank the three, but I think Aiden.
I'll rank him. I can rank him. I have Chase as my one. Nick is my two. Joey is my three. Very, very close. I think that if that injury didn't take place to Nick, I think we were going to see a Heisman finalist type season. Stuff he was doing against TCU when he was not even set, the inside rip that he was able to pull off, he was beating double teams at an alarming rate. I think he's a little bit more twitchy than Joey. I think Joey was stronger, though. I just think that Chase was just better than both of them slightly, and we saw that in the final year. I mean, teams had to double and chip Chase Young, or else he was getting to the quarterback no matter what. So that's how I ranked the three. But again, way below them is Aiden to me.
Well, I mean, and you also talk about a career, right? Those kids as freshmen and sophomores were dominating already. And they were in the rotation as freshmen because Ohio State was so talented. Aiden Hutchinson had 4.5 sacks in his career leading into last season. So he came on strong. He trained hard. He matured. He was like a grown man out there. And if I haven't charted it. And maybe I should. But if you go back, I promise this to be true. I know it to be true. If you chart every single time those three players you mentioned, Chase, Nick, Joey, and Aiden Hutchinson, every time in a game, in their career, that they were blocked by one human being. I don't care who it was. One-on-one. Not double team, not chipped, not the running back helping. No. One-on-one. Without question, Aiden Hutchinson got blocked more. Mm-hmm. It's not even up for debate.
Honestly, damn it, I'm going to do it, Zach. I didn't want to do it. I think this is going to be confusing, and I'm going to jump you through some hoops here. I think because he wasn't so dominant, he was able to have the amount of sacks he had. Now, what that means is because he wasn't as dominant and dynamic, teams didn't get, like, as soon as he stepped on the field, teams didn't say, oh, we have to game plan for him so much so to take those, like sacks are not created equally. Like, Aiden Hutchinson's however many sacks is last year is not the same as Chase Young's double-digit sacks, because Chase Young had to beat a double team to get a sack, meaning that Chase was so good, you had to game plan for him. I don't think you had to specifically game plan to double and triple team Aiden Hutchinson, meaning he was able to get more sacks. Right.
Most people didn't. Nobody did. You also have to watch how these sacks happen. And, you know, there's the clip of him just destroying Thayer Mumford. Like, he made some plays where you went, whoa. I mean, this kid is a no doubt first rounder and going to be a really good NFL player when he made those plays. Mm-hmm. But a number of his sacks were quarterback makes a mistake and flushes the pocket right into him. We saw CJ Stroud do that, right? You can't just say, oh, look at all these sacks. It's like, all right, but watch them. Like, did the quarterback hold the ball forever? Did he really beat a block? Like, did they cut him loose in protection? Like, you got to watch the film to see why. So anyways, that's my hill I'm dying on. He's the fourth best defensive end in this draft. I'm taking Trayvon Walker, number one overall. I think I watched him, the most unbelievable play against Alabama. I think it was Jameson Williams. Jameson Williams caught a pass that kind of broke a tackle, and he goes to hit this crease, and Trayvon Walker came from the D-line position and caught him like 15 yards downfield right before he was about to hit that extra gear and score a touchdown. And it saved the touchdown and might've won him the game. Might've won him the game in the SEC championship game. It was unbelievable. Him and N'Kobe Dean, and I'm not saying N'Kobe Dean, he's a linebacker, he's not going top five. N'Kobe Dean runs as well as any linebacker I've seen. I mean, just this man from one hash mark made a tackle for minus one on the opposite sideline. And I mean, he just impressive. Impressive that a lot of those in Jordan Davis, that Georgia defense was silly,
absurd. I do. Last point on him. Do you like the George Kostopoulos kid or whatever from Purdue?
I do. I really like him. I think he's a cut below Aiden Hutchinson and a similar type of player. But I like him. He's a first rounder. He'll be a lot like Sam Hubbard. I think have a really good, you know, what's Sam been in the NFL really, like three, really 4 years. Yeah, I think he'll flash like that. Like, be one of those guys where you're like, man, he's a really good player. He could play for 10 years even. I don't know if he's generational. Like, he's not like, you know, Joey Bosa or there's big time, you know, Miles Garrett's.
David Ajabu if healthy, would you have had him as a better edge than Aiden Hutchinson?
No. Aiden Hutchinson is a more complete player. David Ojabo is like a wide out D end. I used to talk about it. He's like a pretty pass rusher, right? Which is they're good.
A place for it. Yeah,
they're important. But Aiden Hutchinson's a big, thick fucking D end that can move. He's athletic. He's powerful. He can play against the run. He's a good, decent pass rush. Not as good as David Ojabo in the pass rush department, but overall, he's a better player.
Here's my rule for defensive ends going number one, number two, or number three overall. Even in college, like I would only take one of those guys one, two, or three. If they're a position, if they are a player that incites fear, like I don't think Aiden Hutchinson incited fear. So there was a comment talking about Chase Young. Wisconsin literally took a timeout because they couldn't see where Chase Young was going to line up. Yeah. And when players incite fear like that, that's when they're worthy of one, two, or three. Nobody was scared of Aiden Hutchinson. Quarterbacks were holding the ball against Aiden Hutchinson. So that's where I'm at with that. And that's no shot at him, but there's a reason why. Nobody's committed to him being the number one overall pick, even though fans and like these little and like Matt Miller and all these people are talking about him. And there's a reason why the guys, the NFL guys, are talking about Trayvon Walker as opposed to him at the top.
Yeah, there is. There definitely is. And I saw in the comments why I wonder why Will Anderson didn't declare. He's a true sophomore, and that's what makes it most impressive. I mean, the most impressive thing about it was that the kid was a true sophomore. I mean, just unbelievable. But the guy that I think is not talked about enough is Kayvon Thibodeau, because
which is bizarre. It's bizarre that he's not talked about enough.
I mean, I get it. Like he got hurt, didn't play in a couple games. He was. It's not bizarre. He was so inconsistent. He would play some games and just look average. I watched the UCLA game. The first half, he didn't do anything. I mean, I was like, I'm not impressed. And then he completely took over the second half. I mean, UCLA could not move the ball one inch. Couldn't do anything. Because he was beating double teams, beating tackles, like beating everyone. They could not do anything. Every single play, he was wreaking havoc in the backfield. So he might be the most talented player in the draft, but he was so inconsistent that I can't validate taking him in the top five. I just can't.
Do you think that he's playing a little bit too light? Like he looked wiry, especially in the Ohio State game. Looked a little thinner and something that that there was some worry about. And obviously, they always think concerned about someone likes football. So I do. Yeah. He looks like he played a little bit light. I would have liked to see him play at around 270 at 6'4", if that makes sense. Or do you think that's too heavy?
Because it depends on the kid. Mm-hmm. It depends on the kid. I mean, you know, you could play DN at 255 if you're an athletic freak like he is, but you're just a different type of DN. You're not going to line up on the tight end. You're not going to be, you know, taking on tackles in the run game unless you're setting the edge or knifing inside. You're not going to take on blocks, right? Because you're just a little too light to take on NFL tackles or to NFL linemen. And it's all about how he can move. If he could get up to 265, 270 and still move the way he is, well, absolutely. But his body might not be able to hold it, and I don't know that it can, to be honest with you. So I think he's decent. He might be able to gain 5 pounds, but I'm fine with what he weighs.
Yeah, don't worry. I know that's more of like the nerd analytics side. They have all those weird numbers because, you know, these scouting departments are built of guys that come from the film departments. So basically, they're just up there filming. They kind of work their way up instead of getting former players and athletes. I do want to talk about the defensive back position, Zach, because Stingley Jr., I mean, that's a guy that people think is going to go top 10. After he had a really, really good freshman year. I think he may have peaked his freshman year due to injury concerns, and then he was getting beat a lot those other 2 years. A team in the top five, him and the Hamilton kid, those are both DBs, corner safety, obviously. Do you like teams picking that position that early, or would you rather get a position that's closer to the ball and that contributes to more winning? Because for me personally, sometimes it feels like if you're consistently picking in the top five, you should never go corner or safety. Because that's not going to be the quickest fix. You need to go quarterback. I think Carolina made the mistake last year when they went J.C. Horn instead of who I think is going to be a really, really good player instead of a guy like Justin Fields. Positional weight, do you worry about picking a safety or corner in the top 10?
So safety of the top 10 is probably – it has to be – you have to almost know for sure that he's generational – like he's going to be a 12-year player and a five-time Pro Bowler. Because you look at, I think there's been 9 safeties in the top 15 since 1991. So what is that, 31 years? And the only two that I think you would say were worthy was Sean Taylor back in 2004. He was the 5th overall pick. He was definitely worthy. I mean, he was like 5-time Pro Bowl or something crazy. And then Jamal Adams for the Jets, I think, is warranted of that pick. Maybe the Jets made a positional mistake by taking him just because he was best available and didn't fit what they needed the most. But right. like, you got to think, if you're Carolina, right, you take J.C. Horn at whatever, what was their pick, six or something like that,
something
or eight,
like that. Mm-hmm.
You take him in the top 10. If you, like I mentioned yesterday, have done your research on your quarterback position, right, you either think you can get a free agent like Deshaun Watson, or you know for or that and you know for a fact there's a generational quarterback in that next draft that you could figure out a way, either losing all your games or trading to try to get to go get him, then I'm okay with taking J.C. Horn that high. I'm okay with Denzel Ward going at four to Cleveland. I think it was a great pick because they had Baker Mayfield in the fold, right? They needed help on defense. So a lockdown Pro Bowl corner is absolutely worth it. Safety's a little different, right? Unless you're Troy Polamalu, Sean Taylor, right? Jamal Adams, I would put him in that category. I don't know that you warrant a top 10, 15 pick. I mean, you could get great safeties later in the first round. Like I said, there's been nine top 15 safeties in 30 years. So unless we're saying that Kyle Hamilton is the next fucking Sean Taylor or Ed Reed, he's a reach in the top 10. I don't care how good he is.
And I think even for Ed Reed was drafted in the 20s to and in the 20s, I think you can afford that, because usually if you get past that top 20. And that's,
you know, it's hindsight, right? If now that we know Ed Reed, anyone in the world would go back and spend a top five pick on him, right? And so you have to project, like, is that kid going to become an Ed Reed, right? And to your point, though, you can probably get someone that has a potential to become an Ed Reed at 18 or 22 or whatever, you know, in the late part of the first round.
Yeah, and so I guess with that, I struggle with safeties. Now, Jamal Adams is an interesting one because he was so versatile and not just a free safety. Like, I mean, obviously he was playing in the box. He was close to the football. I just find it's confusing to me. I want guys in the first round, if I'm picking that early, I want guys that are going to be more responsible with contributing to winning. So I think that the Notre Dame kid Hamilton is probably one of the three best players in this draft. I couldn't justify taking him top five. The same way I feel like Jamal Adams was probably one of the top three players in the 2017 draft. But you know who contributes more to winning than Jamal Adams? Christian McCaffrey, who went two picks later. And I know that's hindsight. I know it's easy for me to say, but, yeah, just, but the science of it is a guy that is going to be around the ball or be closer to the ball. Like, defensive ends are closer to the ball and they can wreak more havoc usually than safeties. So I would go defensive end in that top 10, maybe not safety, but Jamal Adams is great, obviously.
It's all impact, right? Impact. Mm-hmm. How much impact does a safety actually have in the game? Right. If you get a guy like Ed Reed, if you get a guy like Jamal Adams that is truly that versatile, he can be a box safety, a post safety, he can disguise. I mean, I studied the Steelers back when Troy Polamalu was there, and there was a snap where when the ball was snapped, he was 2 yards from the line of scrimmage outside of the right tackle. You just thought for sure he was blitzing. And on the snap, he spun and played post high safety 20 yards downfield. And I was watching film like, what the fuck? Like, what do you tell your quarterback? Like, hey, listen, see this guy right here? Yeah, you think he's about to kill you? He's going to play deep middle third, actually. Like, the quarterback would be like, huh? What do you mean?
No, like, he's not. It's like, how? It's like,
athleticism, yeah. And that type of talent, then I think you're warranted of a top 10, top 15 pick, but it's all about impact. Who impacts you the most, right? The first thing is quarterback, because you have to be able, if you don't have a franchise quarterback, you're not doing shit. Hate to break it to you. And then it comes down to DN left tackle, right? Because you're going to have to play Myles Garrett. You're going to have to play Nick Bosa. You better have a left tackle.
And you're in such close proximity to the football.
Well, and never mind that. Fuck the left tackle. If the quarterback wasn't so important, who cares? Exactly. If we were running the ball 35 times a game, who cares, right? But I just said the most important person in the world is the quarterback, your franchise, right? You better protect his ass or you're dead. You're done. Right. And then it goes DN, and then it's corner, because ultimately, if you have a great receiver, a big time receiver, if you have Cooper Kupp, if you have whoever, if you have you look at Mike Evans and what goes on with Marshawn Lattimore every time they play. Right. If you need a lockdown corner to make sure that a great player in the perimeter can't just torch you for an entire game. Right. So that's the pecking order for sure.
Because the defense's job, I mean, it's about quarterback. It's all about quarterback. Can you protect the quarterback? Can you hinder the quarterback? And can you take the quarterback's best friend away? And so that's how I kind of prioritize things. And that's why I think linebackers, it's tough to draft them inside the top five as well. And that's why I think it's tough to draft safeties in the top five as well. Because usually when
you... So And just let's just look at it. Like I mentioned, there was, I think I said there was nine. Jamal Adams is the most recent top 15 pick. You go back all the way through it. LaRon Landry was the number six overall pick in 2007, has been an average player, not worthy of a six round pick. Michael Huff went to the Raiders at seventh overall. Again, not, I mean, okay player, nothing, not definitely not worth the pick. Dante Whitner, eighth overall pick to Buffalo in 2006. Average player, not worthy of a top 10 pick. Roy Williams, it was just mentioned in the chat, in 2002 was the number eight overall pick to the Dallas Cowboys. The same year Ed Reed went in the 20s, he was a complete bust in the NFL. Then Patrick Bates at 12 was a bust. Eric Turner at second overall pick in 91 to the Browns, he was a two-time Pro Bowler, but for a freaking number two overall pick, Christ.
Not good enough. That's just not good enough.
And then the ninth overall pick in 91 that same year, that was the only year there was two safeties in the top 15, was Stanley Richard that went to the Chargers and was just a solid player, played for like 8 years, probably didn't make a Pro Bowl, not worthy, right? So out of all those, you'd say what, two are hits, right? Sean Taylor and Jamal Adams. In 30 years of 10 safeties going in the top 15, only two are hit.
And so, I believe zero playoff wins between the two of them, which is super, super unfortunate. Do you think Kyle Hamilton can do the things that, you know, that those two guys
can
do?
So I really like Kyle Hamilton.
He's big, man. He's much bigger than I thought.
He's 6'4". He's long. He can run. I think he has a chance to be an elite safety in the NFL. I agree with kind of the point we've been making. I think you take him at 17. Mm-hmm. I don't think you take him at 8. I don't think he's good enough to warrant a top 15 pick or at least a top 10 pick. Maybe 14, I could see the value. But you talk about a top 10 pick, he has to become Sean Taylor or Ed Reed or Jamal Adams. Like, that's what he has to be, or else, honestly, you should get fucking fired.
Fire him. That's the professional pressure that comes with
it that. It is. Like, honestly, like I love the kid, Lewis Cine out of Georgia. Mm-hmm. Unless Kyle Hamilton is one of those players we just mentioned, Sean Taylor, if he's not, then just wait and get Lewis Cine out of Georgia. He's going to be a really good pro.
Yeah.
Like, don't waste that pick.
I've watched him a lot. I love him. I think he's awesome. But I honestly, like, I'm not sure he's a better player than Derwin James was coming out. And Derwin James went 17 overall. And
he's not a better player than Derwin James. And there's other guys that I really like. I like Daxton Hill. I think he's a little overrated right now. But again, I think he's going to play in the NFL, the kid from Michigan. I think he's going to play in the NFL for a decent time. You could get him in the second round, maybe late first round, right? The kid from Penn State, Jaquan Brisker, is a fucking monster on the field. Get him in the second round. Go get hit. Instead of wasting a fucking eighth overall pick on Kyle Hamilton, go get one of the three I just mentioned in the late first or with your second round pick. And you're probably going to end up with the same type of player.
Yeah. Like Derwin James plays at 6'2", 215. I think that Kyle Hamilton is 6'4", and plays at 220.
Yeah.
And I think he's an absolute freak. Zach, we didn't hit tight ends yesterday. I want to talk really briefly about tight ends, mainly because our guy, Jeremy Ruckert, is going to be an NFL player. I think he'll have a good career. I think it's a rare situation for him. First of all, I think the NFL is going to value tight ends or use tight ends more in their offense, more than obviously Ohio State. Well documented. We're not tight end you, yada, yada, yada. Something I don't think enough people are talking about. I think Jeremy Ruckert is going to walk into a less talented wide receiver room. And I don't know if that's ever happened for an Ohio State tight end. Like, he is legitimately, wherever he gets drafted, unless he gets drafted by the Dolphins, I think that the pair of Chris Olave and Garrett Wilson and Jackson Smith and Jigba is probably better than most, at least talent-wise, better than most receiver rooms in the NFL.
Obviously, you're projecting
years out, of course.
Mm-hmm. You're projecting where these kids are going to go, but how many receiver rooms in the NFL have three first-rounders?
Exactly.
When they were coming out of high school or coming out of college, I mean. How many? And I don't know that number. I don't think any. But regardless, I agree. And you kind of meant the receiving core, not the receiver room. He won't be in the receiver room. He's a tight end, Chris. Yeah. But I knew what you meant.
Calm down.
I think Jeremy Ruckert is a lot like some of these other guys that you've seen, the Jordan Fullers, the some of these Buckeyes that and not only Buckeyes. There's been several other players Richard LeCount from Georgia was a late round pick for the Browns that I loved, and he hasn't really made a huge impact yet, but I think he'll get on the field for the Browns. So I think Jeremy Ruckert is a guy that's going to be a late round pick that provides a lot of value. And it's one of those picks where it's like, man, that was a great draft pick. Mm-hmm. And so wherever he fits, I mean, I'd love to see him in Cleveland. But
here's the thing. My comfort, I think he's better than Austin Hooper, talent-wise.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I don't think Hooper blocks as well. I think Hooper's career was kind of made by Matt Ryan in the style like that. Yeah. That style. I think that he's a better.
It doesn't matter, though. It doesn't matter because you could have Hooper and Rucker. Just get the fuck, get in job. What the fuck's his name?
Ninjoku.
Ninjoku, whatever. Get him out of there.
Someone did him a disservice, man. He should have been a defensive end.
I don't know, but of course the Browns drafted him a fucking tight end that's really just a big receiver that can't catch. Like, what are we doing?
That's what I'm saying. He should have been a defensive end.
yeah, he probably should have. But anyways, I think Ruckert is going to surprise people. And I'm sure that what happens in the NFL, right? What happens with the draft process is Jeremy Ruckert is a kid that will benefit from his career and not really being featured because NFL scouts are going to look at his testing, work him out, and they're going to go, fucking idiots at Ohio State. They had a first rounder here. So we're smart. We're better than everyone. We're going to take him in the third round and make him into an all pro. And you know what? Kid's probably a second, third rounder. He probably is. So I'd imagine he'll rise up draft boards. I'd imagine he'll kind of be his draft status will fit his career barring an injury. I'm excited for him. I think he's going to be a really good NFL player.
I hope he ends up in LA. I think he needs a creative mind. I hope that Sean McVay's itch to be like a better offensive coordinator than a guy like Shanahan allows kind of him to kind of move forward.
Bookmark this right now. The Njoku slander will look bad after the 2022 season. I beg to differ. Unless he went to see the ball reception gods, maybe he signed up for Zone 6. Maybe I could get him right. Let me get him right.
Here's my issue with Njoku. So for guys like that, like we call him the hybrid wide receiver. Like basically, it's a wide receiver. Mm-hmm. Here's the issue. If you're going to do that, I need you to have elite ball skills and be a good route runner and be a mismatch at all times. Like Kyle Pitts. I think Kyle Pitts is just an okay blocker, but Kyle Pitts is great speed, great ball skills, can high point the ball. I don't think Njoku could do any of those three things. I think Njoku at times shows athletic flashes, but he's not good enough with his ball skills to be as bad of a blocker as he is, if that makes sense. Yeah. And for a first rounder, I mean,
this is absurd.
The Cleveland was the only team that had him as their tight end one. Everybody else had Evan Engram as their tight end one. Same deal. He can't really block, but Evan Engram has better hands. Hasn't been able to stay healthy. But that's what you wanted from Njoku. And when has he been a mismatch? Like, he should have been feasting because Baker Mayfield likes tight ends. Like, he should have been absolutely feasting and simply was not. So that's where I'm at with him. And Tampa Bay is a possible landing spot for Ruckert. That'd be cool. I mean, pass the torch from Gronk. start everything right now.
I'm here for it.
That's where I'm at with that, Zach. Do you have anything else on the draft front?
No, just reminder. It is Wednesday. So if you're already out in Vegas or if you're going to Vegas, go to Sapphire Gentlemen's Club and let them know we sent you. Go hang out with some strippers and watch the first round of the draft on the 100-inch TV screens. They have three of them.
That's insane.
And then T.O. is going to be there for an after party with a slew of celebrities. So just go to SapphireLasVegas.com and check it out. I'm really bummed we're missing it, but I'm excited to hear about it. So if you do go, I don't know if they let you take pictures. Usually in strip clubs, that's a no-no, but if they let you take pictures or if you can sneak a couple, email them to me. We'll put them on the show. I swear to God, we'll put them on the live stream. And I mean, I don't care if, you know, what's in them. I'll blur out any indecencies. So send them to me, Zach@menace2sports.com. And what do you got?
I got one more thing. It's a sports question. I want you to finish though.
A what?
It's a sports question. So it's quarterback wise. This is maybe the last time we get to talk. All right. I think my guy Josh Burris did a podcast and he thinks that the Giants are going to draft Malik Willis at number 7. Who becomes more valuable? Who's more valuable? Who would you rather have if you are a team like Seattle? Daniel Jones, Baker Mayfield, or Drew Lock?
Baker Mayfield.
Over both of them. All right.
Yeah.
That's all I need.
Because I think Baker Mayfield has, I mean, he has a, an argument to be made. I mean, the kid wasn't healthy last year, and I've seen Baker Mayfield have a great season playing quarterback in the NFL. I've seen it with my own eyes. I watched it. Like, so it's possible. Now, was it a fluke? Maybe that's what Cleveland banked on when they went and got Deshaun Watson. But I think I haven't seen Drew Lock have a great year. Daniel Jones has been fucking pathetic. So I'm taking a chance on Baker Mayfield and saying, if he is healthy, I think there's a chance he is who they thought he was, right? So at least you got a chance. I don't think you have a chance with the other two.
If Deebo Samuel becomes a Brown, will you buy a jersey?
I stopped buying jerseys because every fucking jersey I buy, the person leaves the team. Every time. Like I've owned 3 Blue Jackets jerseys. Every time after that season, they leave. I've owned Indians jerseys, Browns jerseys. I mean, I mean, because of my son, like, he likes to wear jerseys, so I'll wear a jersey with him to watch a game. I'm kind of against wearing jerseys as a grown man, but I do it for my kid. Right. But now I'm done. Or if I do, I buy like some slapdick on the bench. Like, I'm like, oh, fuck it. If they trade him, I'm cool. Like, that was LeBron. I bought a Cavs jersey for my son and I, and then immediately he went to the Lakers, and I'm like, fuck this. I mean, I'm serious. Francisco Lindor, LeBron, the Blue Jackets was Panarin. I mean, the Blue Jackets run I had was insane, where every year I'd buy a jersey and he'd leave. So
I have a really cool one, Zach. I have an Odell Beckham Jr. Yankees jersey. Yeah.
The fuck is that?
Some cool beans shit. So it's like, if he gets traded, it doesn't matter. It's still like a cool little thing.
But he never played for the Yankees. That's fucking weird.
He threw out the first pitch.
Why don't you just get a Chris Drew Yankees jersey? That's even cooler. It's fucking you.
I already have one.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm glad we know, Chris. An Odell Beckham Jr. Yankees jersey is Chris's prize. His
pride and joy. It's a little too small.
Pride and joy.
A little too small because I'm getting big out here. But hey, end the show, bro. Oh, and the spring game breakdown, that is my fault. Blame me, the intern. I just haven't sent it to Zach yet for him to do. So I apologize.
Yeah, well, I'm waiting for it.
I just apologize. Kiss my ass, man. I just apologize.
Hey, just see where the hang up comes from. Appreciate everybody. Men is out.